Welcome to the Omni Gamers Club podcast, the podcast for games on all platforms, including Magic Eye puzzles. Make sure to squint really hard. My name is Mark USA.
I am Daniel Winter. Yeah, don't want to strain your eyes there. I don't have the sight.
I'm the same. Like, those were really popular in the 90s. Now that I think about it, but they never worked for me. So
let's assume it's a sailboat.
There you go. It's like the Emperor's New Clothes, right? It only works for smart people. Okay, so today we're going to be rolling into the main event. We're going to be talking about our featured game. Mm-hmm. This time a video game. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, so we'll just say, so now that we're recording the playlist separately, if you want to hear some talk about some news and some of the other games you've been playing, you can listen to our previous playlist episode. But today is just our featured game. That is Chants of Sanaa, and that is as in the Gregorian chants. That is a video game, I should say, developed by Run Disc and published by Focus Entertainment.
Right, Run Disc is just a two-person team, I believe.
Yeah,
they. I'm not sure if they're French or Belgian, or they have French names. Anyways, Julien Moya and Thomas Panuel.
I'm pretty sure I read it. It's a French studio, for what it's worth.
Right,
and there were some other people involved, but it was largely a two-person team.
Right. And Chants of Sanaa. Sanaa has two N's and two A's, as I discovered. So if you're looking it up, make sure to include those two N's. So this game apparently is on lots of platforms. It's on Xbox Game Pass right now, but you can find it on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, Windows, and the aforementioned Xbox. It was released last year. I had no idea.
Yes, September 2023. So about a year old now. So it got quite a bit of buzz in the game of the year discussions at the end of 2023, which had put it on my list. I've been meaning to get to it for a while, and the Game Pass finally pushed me over the edge. So yeah, I thought this would be a fun one to chat about.
Very good. Now let's roll into it. It's been a while, so let's do the general what type of game is this. I think it's pretty clear to say that it's a third person puzzle game. There's a bit of a mystery going on, as into the overall, like, who are you and why are you doing this sort of stuff. I would say it's classic silent protagonist game. Lots of characters talk, but you don't, I don't believe. Not that I can recall.
Has adventure game elements, I will say.
Yeah.
It's sort of the traditional puzzle point and click adventure style. Though I will say I've been cursed by knowledge, and that I'm going to pass along to all of you, that I did see that some people tend to call this genre Metroid Brainiers.
Ah, look at that. A new,
now you have
a
to
new
think
term.
About that every time.
I kind of hate it, but it'll probably grow on me. Just like garlic-like. Yeah, this game relies upon what I came to understand is called constructed language. It's a constructed language game. So it's about languages, but they're not real Earth languages per se, except the fact that they were invented for the purpose of this game. And they're largely written languages, entirely written languages. There might be some murmuring in the background, but you're supposed to decipher them into the language of your choosing, which in our case was English.
Well, curiously, there is spoken language, but it is depicted as the logograms, hieroglyphs, various names for this type of pictographic language.
Right. So this game, I'm not sure how much we want to spoil about this, but it's right on the cover. So I think it's fair to say that you're largely going to be trying to climb a tall tower. And when you think about towers and languages, what comes to mind immediately?
Imagine. Well, I've literally just been reading the book Babel, so very much in my mind. Yes, yeah, so it's got quite obviously an allusion to the Tower of Babel. A biblical story, I guess, that I'm not particularly familiar with. I believe there is the name Sanaa, or a slightly different spelling of that, is involved in that story as well.
Okay, that's cool. I was involved in a couple of productions of Godspell, so I know that that story is pretty crucial to at least one of the songs. I think the opener, where basically it's all starts in chaos and then the people come together.
I'm sure it's come up in many JRPGs as well, as like, yeah, alongside Yggdrasil.
That's right. It's kind of a trope. But in this game, it's kind of central, literally central to the plot. So you're basically this kind of nameless protagonist. I don't think they have a name that
they
give you. Perhaps you are, but maybe you're the chanter. So you're nameless and you're even faceless. You kind of have like that Final Fantasy black mage.
Kingdom Hearts.
No face kind of thing. And yeah, you basically just wake up and you got to get cracking those language puzzles.
Yeah, so you're very quickly presented with these symbols, both written on the world itself and spoken by some other characters you come across, with no knowledge of what these represent, but you can tell through context clues what they are. So, like, I think we need to spoil a couple of the early ones, at least, just to give an example of how this works, is that you start out in the sewers, basically, with various valves and water flowing through, and you might see a symbol on one end of a switch, on the top and bottom of the switch, and symbols on either side. So you might think that's, is it on or off, or is it open, close? Is it up, down?
Up, down.
So immediately right. You're immediately presented with assumptions like, well, mechanically, I know what these two symbols do, but in terms of how it applies to the language, you're already having to think about what phrases you're using. And then that, obviously that very quickly gets complicated. You might meet some other characters. If they all say the same single symbol phrase immediately, you might assume that's hello. Assuming these are friendly people, you don't know. So you can start to piece together what that is. And handily, you have a little notebook on hand in which you can put some notes down as to what you think these symbols may mean and start piecing that together.
Yeah, that notebook was immediately familiar. Because careful listeners of the Omni Gamers podcast know that we covered another recent puzzle-y game called Botany Manor.
Mm.
And this mechanism just sort of seemed ripped from there, or maybe it's just a fairly standard one, where you're a character, you have a book, and you have some hints, and then you have some clues. And in this game, just like in Botany Manor, you have some clues, which are the glyphs that you see throughout the landscape. Either people are talking to you with word bubbles, or you might see a sign like the aforementioned water door switch puzzle, or you might see some murals or something along the wall, stone carvings, signs, what have you. The symbols are everywhere. But pretty much the journal starts linearly. You're presented with maybe three or four hand-drawn pictures of a scene. Like someone might be like, you know, doing like some sort of oration and like music notes come out of their mouth. And you presume that means something like maybe it's singing or maybe it's music or maybe it's sound.
Mm.
So you are provided visual hints and you got to match them to the glyphs through context.
Yeah. So every so often you're given these basically pop quizzes to check where you're at with these illustrations. But I will say like those illustrations in of themselves have a degree of interpretation required. Like yes. There might just be a person gesturing at themselves. Like, well, does that mean I? Does that mean being, existence? Does it mean person? Does it mean a general sense of ennui? You have to interpret how these fit in, both matching that with your own interpretation of the symbols. And most importantly, what those do is just to check that you're on the right track. Because once you match those up, it clicks and locks it into place. Yes, you're correct. These are the exact meanings of these words. Fills it in on your journal, which gives you some context, but stops you from carrying forward sort of forced errors, right?
Yeah, you raise a good point there about assumptions. So the one of the core mechanisms of the game is that you're going to see signs, you're going to hear people sort of babbling at you as the game goes along, and you're going to see, you know, glyph, 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 and then you're going to see dash, dash, dash. But if for glyph beta, say, you assign the meaning up, and then for glyph alpha, you assign the meaning hello, you know, and then it might be glyph delta is go, right? So if you see alpha, beta, delta, it'll be hello, up, go, right? So you can plug in your assumptions about what those words mean. You actually have to type them in. So you can make a guess for yourself. I think that this one, they always start with this one. So this has got to mean hello, right? Or greetings, something like that. So you can see them read out your constructed phrase based on what you assume those symbols mean. And those are really critical to deciphering what the language actually means, because once you hear the multiple people repeat these phrases, these glyphs back to you in different contexts, you realize,
oh, this one's right at all.
This one's totally off. And I think that's a clever system.
Yeah, it's quite a nice quality of life feature, both that there is an inbuilt note system that when you hover over the glyph, it shows your notes. And then when you lock those words in, like you've locked in the correct answer, it will show those correct answers, but it will automatically adjust the phrasing for to correct the grammar, basically, for tense and cases and so on. So you don't really have to think too much about the grammar. You're mostly just matching the words. Like these are all pretty simple phrases. It might be, I see apple. I like apple. I want apple. So they're not particularly complicated phrases we're dealing with here.
Right. Now, I don't know about yourself, Daniel, but I grew up speaking one language, and then I immigrated to Canada, and I learned a second language, which is actually my strongest language right now, is my adopted one. My first language is not that strong. And then I've picked up some words from a couple of different languages here or there since then. So if you come from a multilingual background, I think you already have like some flexibility in terms of different sentence structures and grammar usage. So I really appreciated that as someone who comes from, you know, multilingual background, that they were playing with that. And there's clearly like clever stuff going on. So one example early on I want to bring up is, I think you said something like apple. Like one example early on with the first region, let's just say, is that each region, by the way, has its own written set.
Yeah, there's several different languages and different cultures with their own language.
And of course, this is not pretty obvious. So it's I wouldn't say it's really a spoiler, but you have to go through all the regions and they can't talk to each other and you have to help them talk to each other. Right. So in the first region, there's a glyph for man. And then if you put two of them together, it's plural and it's men or people. So you realize in this language, if you put two singular nouns together, it's plural.
Yes.
Right. But in the next region you go to or another region you go to, you try that again and it doesn't work. And then you realize that there's a second glyph that means plural. Mm. So you have to say plural man equals men or people.
Yeah, they all have their own way of representing plurals, and negative statements is the other main sort of grammatical structure. And it never really gets particularly complicated beyond those, I will say. Grammar is not the focus on this. You're largely just matching words to symbols. That's a pretty basic level of... That's as complicated as it gets in terms of trying to analyze the structure, I think.
Right.
There is one later on that I won't spoil, which changes... In the same way that, say, French will put the adjective before the noun. Oh, sorry, like we'll take the car blue, for example. They will change with the structure in that sense, but not in a particularly complicated way.
Right. So I appreciated that they already thought that far ahead, and that actually adds to the sort of the complexity of unraveling the puzzle, is that you make some assumptions and then you realize, oh, these assumptions are close, but they're not exactly right. Like I actually have to say that if, you know, I have one symbol for tree and two symbols for forest sort of thing. Right. And that's straight out of like Chinese glyphs. So that part I really appreciated that they went there.
Yeah, I was curious to get your perspective on as a bilingual speaker, because in doing research on how this works as sort of logographic languages, the main ones that came up were Egyptian hieroglyphs and Chinese characters. And I'm not sure where Japanese fits into that sort of language structure.
Yeah, Japanese writing is largely based on Chinese writing. So there are symbols that mean entire words, right? In Chinese, they use the core set of Chinese characters, and each symbol is a word. And Japanese adds some phonetic symbols to it, which represent sounds. And each of those characters don't represent words, but you have sentences that include multiple sets of glyphs, and some of those use the Chinese word symbols. So it's actually a fairly complex example. But I did appreciate that they tried different things, and it's mostly like the sentence structure, like you're alluding to sentence structure differences that I appreciated kind of playing with.
Well, one of the other cool details that I think has some similarity, especially with Japanese and Chinese, that you might not, I don't think is vital to even pick up on, but if you're paying attention, you can definitely see that. So it's one path to sort of help piece this together, is that some of these glyphs are composed of smaller parts, like little graphemes or morphemes, I think they're called, where you might see a particular small section of a glyph appear in multiple circumstances or sort of modified by another symbol. So you might see a symbol that you figured out means music, and then you see another little symbol next to that which might imply a noun associated with music, so instrument. Or you might see a symbol that's associated with a locational place, so like music shop, for example, as an early example. So sort of combined symbols as sort of little jigsaws as part of the bigger picture that you can help piece together.
Yeah, I think in Chinese language, those additional symbols are called radicals, if I'm not mistaken, and they can sort of modify the meaning of a word, sort of a base word, into sort of like a conglomerate of those words. And I really appreciated how even in some of the earlier languages, you could sort of infer meaning based on the shape of the symbols.
Yeah.
For instance, there were some symbols that meant up, and then there are some symbols that mean down. And in most, in a lot of the languages, written languages I've seen, that they will literally just flip it, right? So one of them is facing up, quote unquote, and one of them is facing down. And similar words have similar visual distinctions, left or right. Or small and big might be another example.
There are definitely subgroups within these symbols. And I do wish that there was a way to reorganize them, because they're just presented to you in a grid of all these symbols and you hover over them to see the names. And I wish you could reorganize them to put all the sort of people, noun phrases in this corner, put all of the directions in this corner, for example. Sure.
Yeah, I think that would be probably a nice quality of life improvement if the game was like quite a bit longer. But
yeah,
I can see why they stuck to how they did it, which was sort of the sequence of how the glyphs are introduced. So they're like chronological. So you might be introduced to a really odd set of the first three or four glyphs, right? And then you might encounter some related ones later on as you explore a region.
You can also can find things out of order, though. There isn't a set order, and they say they appear in your logbook in the order that you find them, not in the set, not in the order that the game has presented, basically. Yeah.
You would have to sort of call back upon your memory, and some of the earlier areas are much more linear, so you could probably say, this set of symbols I saw in these rooms. And so I must have to backtrack there. And there was a decent amount of backtracking in this game. So you finished it recently. I finished it about a week ago. So it's pretty fresh in our memories, I think. There's four main worlds, and there's four sort of groups of people that belong to those regions. Each core region comes with its own people, who sort of correspond to like a cast or at least a role. I found, I think objectively, when I did a bit of research, they're called the devotees, the warriors, the bards, and the alchemists. And you probably won't familiarize yourself with those names until later in the game, but you'll definitely note their distinctive appearance.
Yes.
Each of them, basically every character in this game wears a mask or a helmet, armor, some sort of like very distinctly designed sort of headgear.
And they're very clearly divided in space, right? They were all on completely different levels of the tower, living separately, blocked off quite forcefully in some ways. And that's part of the sort of the mystery to unravel here is bridging that divide, by figuring out why they're divided and potentially try to reunite those differences.
Some of the groups might have power over the other groups. Some of the groups might have very favorable or unfavorable opinions about the other groups. And it's kind of cute to see how those play out. One of the smartest thing I thought while playing this game was each group refers to another by a different colloquial name.
I was about to say that. Yes. Yeah. So not to say which one is which, but like one group refers to another as the chosen ones.
Yes.
or there's one group that refers to another as the impure, but it's also the same symbol they refer to for like as monsters, which is, I know it does not this. This game has a like heavy-handed message, but it can show the power of words and context and how we refer right. to other people and what that can imply.
Well, the word barbarian, right, means those people from over there, right? Like it refers to a region. It doesn't mean they're, you know, terrible people, although that's the insinuation, right, that came out from that. So I think what you're getting at is that language is very hard to divorce from culture. And each of these regions, each of these people definitely have their own culture, and they have strong opinions about the others that they're quite separated from in literal cases here. Some want nothing to do with the others. Some want to lord over the others. And it's kind of fascinating to see how each region plays out. Additionally, each region has a very different look and feel, particularly in not just the costumes that the people wear, but the architecture and the color palette. You might have
even
noticed
the gameplay in some ways that sets the tone for a particular area.
Right. Yeah. The architecture is really quite stark between the first and the second area, and that kind of like made me think, oh, well, they're really going places with this one here.
Yeah, the second one is quite sort of brutalist in a sense, like very, very sharp edges, cavernous spaces, where as opposed to sort of the more Greek or sort of Arabic sort of architecture in some of the other areas.
Yes. And in the second area, you're right, like some of the regions have come with their own distinctive different mechanisms that they emphasize. For instance, some regions are all about, there's stealth elements, stealth and hiding or distraction, which is, you know, like a genre of its own, right? You have games like Siphon Filter and not Siphon Filter. You have games like Metal Gear Solid, Splinter Cell. You have all of those for a reason, but
there's even a survival horror section of all things in this game.
That's right. That's right.
Which is so out of place. It's wild, but it does mix it up. Like it's not entirely a language game, which I was expecting I was expecting something like The Witness, where you go through a series of segmented puzzles, but the language is just one part of a sort of larger breathing world here. Whether it's, like I said, more traditional point-and-click puzzles like manipulating machinery, or even like your classic Zelda sliding crates into a particular shape type puzzles.
Yep. Or the Resident Evil kind of rotate the sculptures.
Or find the right key and, yeah.
Yeah, they really draw upon the whole sort of history of, at very least, graphical adventures. And later on, I'll tell you about a text adventure game that this reminded me of.
I've not played Myst, but I got some vibes of what I imagine Myst to be like.
Certainly, yeah. I think they're just kind of, obviously this team loves graphical adventure games, and they're pulling through, and they love languages, and they have a very strong sense of design direction, graphical design. Each of the regions has a very distinct color palette, and they do this interesting thing where, I don't know what this is called, maybe your partner, who's a illustrator, I believe, might know what this is called, but where they key the black onto a different color. So you'll notice this on the box art, and in particular in the color palette of the starting world, which has a very strong, mostly yellow. And then you'll notice all of the darkest parts, all of the shade where you should see the no face of the primary character, because it's entirely hidden in a hood, it fades into this purple maroon. And it's very, very stark, and it has a particular visual effect that I think is really strong and quite attractive.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a technical term for that. It does remind me a lot of sort of almost comic book with a very sepia tone wash to it. It reminds me of a game called Sable that I think I may have discussed previously. Okay. It had a similar sort of washed out, cel-shaded look to it. But yeah, it's quite striking. And the line work is clearly the main focus here, with just a very simple use of color.
The art reminded me of this indie TTRPG called Ultraviolet Grasslands, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with.
No.
It's kind of a indie zine RPG that's in its second edition now, so it's decently popular. But it's basically like, you know, wastelands and sort of ruined civilizations and weird machines. So kind of fits right in. If you've tried it out or you've played Chance of Sinnoh, maybe that TTRPG will be of interest to you.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to tangent into is you're talking about the sort of the level design is that the game is presented in largely a series of forced perspective shots where you're the like forced fixed camera angle, right? So which does play into a large degree of observation in like having to pay attention to the landscape, and like there might be symbols hidden in certain areas that you wouldn't immediately notice, or paths to side areas that you have to sort of move to the right spot of the screen in order to find this sort of hidden path. So that, again, that's a whole other level that you need, like these observational skills that you need to develop outside of just the language itself.
Yeah, I actually really like that because it takes me right back to the early days of graphical adventure games. You know, nowadays, of course, you can look in any direction with a 3D engine-based game. But you mentioned Myst. You know, Myst had very specific frames set up. And if you're in a room, and it had one frame, that's all the information you got. Maybe there might be in this corner of the room, there might be a panel, and they would give you a close-up of that. And they did that in this game, too. For instance, at the start of the second world, you're sort of faced with this imposing kind of entrance far in the distance. Your character is closer. And you can see at the top of the entrance that there's a sign. You can't quite make out what's at the top of the sign. But if you highlight it, because you can use your left stick, I think, or whatever stick it was, or your mouse, and you can highlight it area, and you can sort of zoom in just to a close-up, one close-up of that. And that's about as much assistance they give you. There's certainly
there is a button control that you can, same as like in a Diablo game where you'd hold down the button and it would highlight all the loot in the level. Yeah. There's a button here, you press it and it will show all the interactable things on the screen. So you're like having to pixel study what is clickable in this game.
Yeah, although I admit I kind of didn't discover that until probably halfway through the game. So I didn't rely on it very much, but yeah, I think that's a great accessibility aid if people like that, or just use it whenever you want to.
Yeah, so let's jump into, we talked about some of the other mechanics in this game, like the stealth and the puzzles, and like how did you feel that this was integrated into the game?
I thought it was pretty delightfully integrated. I mentioned how each of the regions has its own look and culture, and I think the kind of the gameplay mechanisms that they introduce and sort of wove into each of the sections emphasized the culture of each region. So let's just say you go into the warriors region. This is probably not much of a spoiler. The warriors are
pretty aggressive,
very, very regimented, right?
Yeah,
they march. Like the first thing you see them do is they march, they guard, they patrol. You know, that's what guards do, and boy do they ever do it. And they do it, and you have to deal with that. You have to make your way around, and it feels like, oh, I'm in a different place than I was before. And it sort of makes up for the fact that you feel this high after finishing the last area. Is like, I got every word, I beat the game, I learned all the entire language. You feel great. And then you start a new area and you're like, oh, heck.
Back at square one.
Right back to square one. And now that's not necessarily true, because some areas will have these things, which is another language trope, which is called a Rosetta Stone.
Yes. Yeah.
So a Rosetta Stone, for those that are unaware, is based off of a real stone that was discovered in the Middle East, the Near East, which was basically just like civic information, but it was the same phrase was printed in three different languages, and modern historians knew what two of the languages meant, but because they could read the third one, they could correlate them, and then they could translate this third language, which they had previously had no translation for.
I mean, so it's probably the equivalent of like the sign you get at the DMV, but it's got like both the English and the French there, and like, please line up over here, and all this very bureaucratic information. But yeah,
right.
Important context to directly compare those two languages.
Right. When you're bored and you're waiting in line at an airport for a country you haven't visited before, you can see that some of the signs are in English, and you can see that some of the signs are in their local language, and you could probably decipher by correlating the placement of the words, this or that. Anyways, it's a bit of nerdy language talk, but there's Rosetta Stones like this that exist throughout, and I thought that was very cool.
Yeah, curiously, though, there aren't always direct translations. Like, you might, the two equivalent words might actually be have a completely different word once you confirm them. So there are close approximations, but there are clear differences in these cultures and how they choose to represent certain words. Like, some are more poetic or more scientific in how they portray these concepts. Like, even something like I think potion was one of the early ones you find.
Sure.
Other languages might use that as a imply a more scientific, like a formula or a tonic, as opposed to a more sort of magical connotation that potion has,
right? Which once again represents culture. Because culture is about perspective, right? They might have a different word and a different value system associated with an idea. Some cultures might think medicine great. Some cultures might think medicine bad. Actually, let's just let nature heal us. You know, that exists, right, in the real world.
Yeah, and there is a part, like, later on in the game, like, where you have basically to reverse that. You have to translate phrases from one language into another, and which was largely pretty straightforward. You're just scanning through the grid looking for the equivalent word, but there were a few instances like that where I think the game is at its strongest, where you're having to think through, well, wait, there's no specific word for this in the other language. How would they represent this concept?
Yeah, you really have to extrapolate everything that you've learned so far through the course of the game.
It's only a little bit of that right at the very end, though, I will say.
Right. So you were asking about the differing mechanism.
Distracted, yes.
And I think, yeah, definitely the warriors was the most obvious and kind of really, like, right on point in
quite
execution.
Rigid in how you had to approach those level that sort of area.
I thought that was quite appropriate.
Thematically appropriate, yes. Not the most interesting. Like, it wasn't particularly engaging, and like, largely just waiting for opportunities. Like, study. Sure. It's like the old Zelda game where you're watching the guards move around. You have to wait for the right spot to jump in, and it's a lot of waiting for the window and then executing it, or just going through the motions, right?
Yeah.
And there wasn't a huge, like, there were fail states, which is strange for a puzzle game. It you don't lose a lot of time. Like, it resets you, like, just a little bit back in the same room, but it did take you out of the feeling. Appropriate, but
you had an instant reset, kind of like you're playing Super Meat Boy or something like that.
Yeah, a little tonally inconsistent. Thematically, yes, but yeah, tonally it was a little strange. It set the tone for the culture, but in terms of the gameplay, it was quite out of place, I thought.
Yeah, I thought the newer mechanisms that they introduced later, like, one of the worlds, like, literally has mini games, because that world is all about sort of like arts and culture and play. So,
well, here's an early one to not give away a spoiler for a later area. There's an early section where there's a card game, and you learn some information about the hierarchy of different types of people in that culture through cards. And like, well, this card trumps this card, and this card trumps this card. You do that through a very simple sort of process of elimination.
Right. But
the language of cards and games can communicate something about culture.
Yes, value systems. Absolutely. Yeah, I forgot about that one because it was so early in the game, but you're right. That was an interesting one. Yeah. Basically, you start from the bottom of the tower, right? So the bottom people are at the lowest caste, essentially. And the higher you go, the higher, more power they have. So you find that the first world is the most meager. Second one is a little bit more regimented, and they have more, but they don't have a lot of freedom. And then they gain more freedom in a lot of different senses as you go higher up. So that world where they had a little bit more play and symbolism was interesting because there was a lot more, I don't know, like metaphor, and there was a lot more things that were not concrete, right? When you live in a meager world, or when you live in a very militant world, you're dealing with very concrete things, life and death, food, having enough, you know, shelter, that sort of stuff. But when you have a affluent world, or a world where people are, I don't know, what intellectuals, the intellectual freedom, then you can think about bigger ideas, right? And that sort of arc carries through the course of the game.
Abstracted ideas.
Yes.
But that too had its own forms of, not, I wouldn't say bigotry, but bias that was presented through. Even the more artistic, sort of cultured societies definitely had the bias through language in how they represented the others. So it's great. I think this game is best when it forces you to challenge your assumptions in that sense, and your bias is clashing with these other cultures' bias, and creates for some interesting dynamics there.
Yeah,
I don't want to spoil anything, but yeah, it does go some places. I will say, the further it goes on, you mentioned earlier, there's a lot more backtracking. And that's one thing I have very little patience for in these games. When in a puzzle game, and I see the solution, I clicks into place, I know exactly what I need to do, but now I have to spend 5 minutes taking this block over here to get the key to bring it back here. Like, once I know the solution, I just want to solve it on that screen. I don't want to have to go back and forth for 5 minutes. And this game does do a little bit of that, which is quite frustrating. I'd rather, that's when it's getting away from the language, right? When it's just focused on the mechanics and the physical space.
Yeah. Thankfully, this game introduces a fast travel system. But it's not a very free fast travel station. So there's basically these stations that you discover, basically maybe two or three in each region, and they will let you warp between any of this, basically through this overworld map of the tower. And thankfully they're there. Otherwise you'd be walking a really long time, but still just backtracking, like, okay, I can get to the closest station, but how exactly do I get to the particular room that has the key or the bottle or this or that? That part can be a little bit frustrating, but as to the length of the game, is about what, 9-10 hours?
About 8 hours it took me, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, and I will say, I didn't have to look up any guides, which is rare for me in the puzzle games. I have very little patience for, like, when I hit a wall. I know some people did have an issue with it. There are pretty hard walls in this game, like that you literally need, like you have to fill in this journal or find a specific key or solve this puzzle before you can progress at all. Yeah. I know some people struggle with that. I did largely find that they were fairly intuitive. There was a couple of times where I wasn't sure if I was on the right track. So I looked up a guide just to know, okay, am I on the right track here, or do I need to shift gears entirely? And I was, broadly. So.
Yeah, I found that, you know, when this is the classic adventure game thing where, you know, the reason why adventure games are not as popular as they used to be is because, well, you can do so many more things with modern computers and their processing power now.
There are different verbs.
Yeah, old games, adventure games like this, the problem was, if you didn't solve a puzzle the right way, there's no alternate way around it, right? You have to follow the obtuse logic of the game designer, and they didn't really give you a lot of wiggle room there. And in this game, it follows upon very similar traps. So what you have to do is rely upon the old trick, which is sleep on it. Walk away. Right? It's just like a Dark Souls boss or something like that. You can throw yourself at it 10, 20 times and you can't beat the boss. You sleep on it, you walk away. The next day you hit it, you beat him the first time. And I promise you, if you try that, you will gain a new perspective on solving some of these adventure game puzzles.
I do think that's one of the strongest elements here, other than those explicit puzzles where there is a very specific solution, especially later on in the game, is a couple of like ones that feels like they're directly out of Myst or something with moving blocks around. But in terms of the language solutions, there are multiple ways to approach those. Like whenever you're presented with those pop quizzes, you could just brute force it and like drag and drop every symbol until something matches bingo. most of these zones are pretty open-ended with a couple of exceptions. So that if you hit a wall and you can't quite make a connection, you could sit there and look at a phrase. You might have a series of three phrases. You could look at those three phrases and pull out every bit of possible information, make prestigious notes, or you could just go to a different area, look for more clues, and hope that the context will sort of fall into place. And once you've, for everything you lock in further on, will sort of cascade information and context down to these other things that you may have been having trouble with. It's a little bit like a crossword. Like if you're struggling with a clue, go to one of the other adjacent clues, and that will give you a couple of the letters to give you some more context, basically. It's a similar sense of deduction.
Right. I'll say, continuing on with talking about the regions of the map, I thought the second to the last one introduced the most sort of adventure gamey puzzles.
Yes.
And that got a little bit tedious there. Maybe yep. I was just running out of energy. The very last world is actually quite short. And it's sort of the culmination.
It's more of a kappa more than a thing, yeah.
Certainly, yeah. It's like an epilogue, I suppose you say. You can say. Although there's an actual epilogue, and that might have been the most challenging one.
I don't want to spoil anything, but it does force you to synthesize all the information you've learned in some interesting ways.
That's right. It's like you've done all the studying, you aced all the quizzes, now you have to show us your work, you have to write us an essay. With everything that you learned.
In that sense, though, it is a tricky game. So for better or worse, it's a game that's hard to put down. Like, because every time you lock a new word in and you get some more context, oh, cool, I can go and apply that word to this phrase over here, which will give me some more information. But that also works against it, though, is that if you stop playing, you lose that momentum. Especially, or when you progress to a new level, you forget. Like, by the time you get to the top level, you've forgotten the grammar and the structure of the bottom two. So once you start synthesizing those, if it's been like a few weeks since you've played or started the game, that flow isn't entirely there anymore.
Yeah, thankfully the notebooks are still there, and you have the completed cipher essentially.
It doesn't help with the grammar though. Like which it wasn't a vital part of it, but there were a few instances where grammar matters, and that is not represented in the notebook, right?
Right. I was going to say, like you, I didn't have much trouble with learning, basically filling the book. Filling the book in each region is not so hard. Like you said, you can brute force it very much like Botany Manor. But later on, when you actually have to translate one language to another, you're flying without a net. And that definitely brings the challenge.
So it definitely did benefit us having played this in a pretty short span, I will say.
Certainly, yeah. You kind of have to do it. And it's true. I kind of got sucked in maybe the second or third session. I played like into the wee hours of the morning because I did kind of get hooked.
It is compelling in that sense. So I said it works both for and against it.
Right. Now, tell me, this is a bit of a tangent, but what is your graphical adventure game history? Like, have you played a lot of these, or is this something you dabble in? Or
so I've not played many of the traditional ones, like the LucasArts adventure games. Like, I was largely a console kid, so I didn't have all these PC point and click adventures. I've played a fair few of the more modern ones. Whenever I've gone back, I haven't had much patience for those old games and the way they communicate information, the trial and error that's required. The newer ones, I tend to have hint systems or have a more sort of better integration and more organic puzzles. Like the one that comes to mind for me is Return of the Obra Dinn. I don't know if you ever played that.
Which I haven't.
Again, has this very similar sense of deduction, but more of a murder mystery, sort of a murder mystery accounting, but similar deduction sense. And you have a notebook, and you're trying to make connections. Connecting the dot between like who killed who died in what way, almost like Cluedo, I guess. But and once you lock a certain number of them in, it sort of it will confirm that you're correct, right? Similar to the pop quizzes here. Once you make notes, you make suggestions, and then once you've gotten a certain amount correct, it'll confirm it. So I think it actually works. It's a very similar sense of logic, and it did make me think as to how much this game is actually a language game, or is it just a deduction game disguised as a language game?
Yeah, I think people that like languages, like learning languages, will enjoy this. But I don't think it entirely relies upon that. I don't think you have to know a different language. Don't think you have to be bilingual. I think people that like puzzles, like crosswords, kind of like you said, Sudoku even. Basically, it's like symbology, right? If you like puzzles, I think this game really does it well. I think this is more of a puzzle game versus adventure game in a lot of cases, but it does borrow a lot of tropes from graphical adventure games.
It is hybridizing a few different genres there,
Yeah,
I do think it's accessible in that you don't really have to have an understanding of language. Really, all you're doing is connecting the dots. There are a couple of grammatical structures. You don't really have to have a robust understanding of the grammar and the syntax in these languages. It's largely just pattern recognition and observation, right?
Yeah, and you have that guidebook to help you all the way along. Mm. As for me, for my history with graphic adventure games, I pretty much didn't play text adventure games, except maybe like briefly in like computer class in early elementary school days.
Yeah, like, I think I played Zork in university as part of the game design.
I definitely played one of the Zorks back in the day, but quickly lost interest because there's no graphics, right? How can you play a game without graphics? I thought. Ironically, later on in my life, I would create a text adventure game podcast. But that's a story for another day. But I played the adventure games, the graphical adventure games from all throughout the ages, namely Maniac Mansion, that was on console, NES. That was my first introduction to LucasArts games. Then I played Monkey Island on the PC, and I have played a smattering of them. I wouldn't say I'm comprehensive knowledge, but I do appreciate some of the later ones too. You got your Telltales, you got your, some of the newer games that we played, like Harold Halibut and Botany Manor, and even games like Cocoon. Yeah, exactly. The other sort of puzzly game. That one was much more action-focused, but boy, did that one have some great puzzles in it. So I thought that this game was a good sort of maybe like history, homage, honoring some of that tradition of puzzly adventure games. And if any of this sounds slightly interesting to you, it's a solid recommendation. I enjoyed my way all the way through.
Yeah, excellent. I confirmed earlier that I don't really have a great understanding of languages. Like, I studied a little bit of German in college, enough to know that I have no understanding of like dative versus nominative cases. I know enough to know what I don't know, basically. So I found this very approachable. You get to feel like you're translating, even if you're not really. So it's a very approachable, accessible language themed puzzle game. I would say as one final sort of highlight is that I really like how organic all the language and everything is sort of incorporated into it. It's not just a series of friezes and sort of sculptures, right? It's a living world. You're talking to people. You're seeing signs on shops. The lever, sort of like the safety information, revolutionary pamphlets,
graffiti,
a theater play, so many different contextual ways in which language is represented in this organic world and how it reflects culture. So I really appreciated that in that it wasn't a rigid puzzle box.
Right. Yeah, I was really actually a little bit upset when the game ended. I kind of wanted to keep going back to something like that to tweak that little endorphin rush in my mind. I'll make this recommendation. I mentioned before that I have played some interactive fiction text adventure games in my day. There is an excellent one room escape room game, entirely text based. It's free. Anyone can go check it out on ifdb.org, the interactive fiction database. It's from 2007 by David Fisher, and it's called Suvenux, Suvehnux. And it reminded me of this game right away. Basically, you are the sort of sorcerer's apprentice. You're trying to clean up his, workshop, and you lock yourself in the room. And the only way you can get out is by deciphering his cryptic spellbook. And let me just say, you will learn a whole new language when you play that game, because all you got to do is try out these spells and see what they can do for you. Just brilliant. Another great constructed language game. And if you like this one, you'll like that one too.
So a couple of other recommendations that came to mind for me, if you're in if you like your Metroid brainiers. One of my favorite games of all time, hands down, let me make sure I'm not saying the wrong one. It's The Outer Wilds. It's not The Outer Worlds, Outer Wilds. So sci-fi archaeology game in which basically once you have solved everything, you could go straight from the start of the game to the end in a very short time span. Most of the game is literally is just knowledge that you need in order to get there, piecing together both mechanical parts but also language, and like a lot of alien glyphs as part of that as well. Similar sense of sort of graphing out all the information in this big sort of brain map, I guess you'd call it. So that was a really strong game, one of my personal favorites. But one that I've not played, but I'm getting similar vibes that may strike a similar tone, is a new board game from Hollandspiel called City of the Six Moons. And so this is a sci-fi game in which there are rules, but the rules are basically all presented as pictograms. And you have to, like, the game is figuring out the rules of the game by deciphering these pictograms.
Sci-fi, you say? This sounds kind of interesting. Maybe we're going to have to check that out.
Yeah, so that's definitely put me in mind of that. And one other that I've definitely... It's been on my list for a while that I think this is going to finally push me over the edge into is Heaven's Vault, which I think this was inspired by in to some degree, in that it was more of an archaeological... historical language-based game, but much more focused on the language and narrative, without more soft locks, and like solving the language wasn't necessarily a hard progress. It was more just a unlocking narrative and understanding is the analogy I've seen. So a bit more of a narrative archaeological and much more deeper into the actual construction of a language and syntax. If you want to go a little deeper.
You mentioned earlier The Witness as well, which is a game that I really admire. I got to admit, I bounced off of it, like probably a lot of people did. But playing this game is kind of making me want to go back, though.
That one did come to mind a bit as well, yeah. It is a little full of itself, I will say, by the end, if you want to get the full progression there. But yeah, very, very cool concept that will sort of break your brain and perception of the world in some really fun ways.
Right. You have to learn a new language, a new kind of way of thinking. And in that way, it's similar. All right. Shall we wrap it up there with our puzzle adventure?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. So we're not going to announce our next game yet because we're sort of running into a little bit of summertime vacation chaos happening here. So there may be some gaps in our weekly schedule, let's just say.
Yeah, we both happen to schedule our vacation at the same time, which may be for the best. We all need a break. So there'll probably be at least a week or two we take off, though Mark may be finding a special guest or two to join in my stead.
Yeah, when I'm back in action, I'll definitely stoke up the fires again and get them going until you return from the wilds, the outer wilds, where you're going to.
The wilds of the Scottish Highlands.
Very nice. Exciting. I'm going to the wilds of sunny Mexico. So
very different worlds there. So yeah, yeah, hopefully we get some games in between there. I definitely will be playing something on the plane. So
or learn some languages. You can learn a dialect. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very nice. All right, let's wrap it up there and promise that we'll get back as soon as we humanly can to the playlist.
Yeah, so if you have any questions or comments on this game or any other suggestions for sort of puzzly language games, you can join the club and email us at omnigamersclub@gmail.com or at our website, omnigamers.club.
That's right. And go check out this episode in video form at YouTube, or get us in audio form in the podcatcher of your choice.
Yep. And you can find me at Board Game Feast on Twitter and Instagram and Blue Sky.
Yep. And I'm Omni Gamer Mark in lots of places too.
Excellent. Well, enjoy your summer vacation. We'll hopefully enjoy mine and anyone else out there on enjoying the summer.
Great. And until the next time, have a balanced diet of games.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.